This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com, I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie Kasem is not here today. It's been a couple of weeks. She's been on vacation. Actually, I think she's on assignment. She doesn't tell me where she goes, but she leaves the state and leaves me in a state of oblivion, not knowing what to do. But I came up with a great idea. I thought, what better to have someone replace Carrie Kasem than none other than Melissa Lefkowitz. Melissa,
genius.
Welcome back to Gervy's Law.
Thank you for having me. I love being on this show.
Aren't I a genius?
You're brilliant.
I was thinking, what a great co-host. Because usually you've been here and you've been a guest. We've talked about the top 40. I think the last show we had on, we were talking about the top 40 guests of all time in Gervy's Law. And now you're sitting in Carrie's chair.
I love this chair. I could totally get used to this chair. but nobody could fill Carrie's shoes.
Oh,
nobody.
Yeah.
She's that tremendous.
She's not listened to the show, so you don't have to suck up.
All right,
her.
I love this chair.
There you go. You know, Melissa, you have been doing a great job. You have another show coming up. You were the co-host of Reasonable Doubt Investigative Discovery's show, and you're often on CNN, on Law and Crime Network, and other media. And, of course, you're a partner, the managing partner of Chester and Lefkowitz, criminal lawyers. How do you have time to sit in that chair?
You make time to do these incredible things.
Everyone says
and
you.
Sitting across from you, this is the highlight of my day.
Thank you very much. You're such a keener. You're a real keener. And we just had the high holidays, so that must have been a wonderful experience.
Incredible, spiritual. It was incredible.
And you're not even Jewish.
I am Jewish.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of Jewish and speaking of lawyers, this is a special show that we have today because we're honored to have with us someone that you don't meet every day, other than the fact that she's one of the most engaging, wonderful human beings with a great heart and a great soul. And she's not even that old. She's mature way beyond her years. But what is interesting, Melissa, about Jackie Raffi is that she's a lawyer. She got her law degree from UCLA School of Law. And she went to undergraduate at UCLA as well. And she practiced entertainment law in Los Angeles for about 4 years, representing, people negotiating deals for major artists and in the media arena. And then what happened, Melissa? She became a cantorial soloist and the director of music of Shomrei Torah Synagogue in West Hills.
Incredible transition.
How many lawyers do you know that can sing?
When a therapist tells a lawyer to just go and do something that makes them happy, you know, good for her. This is what's going to make her happy. This is it. This is her calling.
And she's doing such great work with all of these new creative ideas and initiatives for the synagogue. And she has often led services at other synagogues, Sinai Temple, Wilshire Boulevard Temple, and other congregations in Los Angeles. So without missing a beat, you get that? That's a music reference. Jackie Raffi, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Hello. Thank you so much for the very, very kind introduction. I'm so happy and honored to be speaking to both of you, Alan and Melissa.
It's exciting to have you on because you have energy that everyone should experience. It's contagious. But of course, the burning question that we have to ask is. And we ask so many burning questions at this time of year, the Jewish people, non-Jewish people, because for the Jewish New Year, we talk about all of these questions. With you, we've got to ask you, how did you transition from being a lawyer into what you are doing right now as the cantorial soloist? And you can explain to us exactly what a cantorial soloist is, because I'm sure some of our listeners are shaking their heads thinking, what the heck is that?
Yes, it's a mouthful. Okay, I'll do that first. So clergy, a clergy person in the Jewish tradition can be a rabbi or a cantor. I think many of us know what a rabbi is, the Jewish spiritual leader. A cantor is someone who leads the musical liturgy and all the musical programming within a synagogue. And Judaism has a very strong musical core to it. So a cantor does things like lead the choir and teach children music and just run services and pray during services. But that requires 5 years of graduate school to be either a cantor or a rabbi. It's 5 years of graduate school and ordination. If you are not yet ordained, and some people choose not to get ordained as a cantor, you become a cantorial soloist, which can do many of the things that a cantor can do, but doesn't have the official ordination. So I'm in cantorial, actually, I'm also in rabbinical school, but I'm studying to become officially ordained. And until then, my title is cantorial soloist.
Whoa. I'm blown away by you. You are living the dream. Can you tell me how this transition happened?
Whose dream are you? What do you mean she's living the
this
dream?
This is amazing.
It's her dream. Is it your dream?
Maybe.
You can't sing.
It sounds dreamlike to me.
But
first of all, I can't.
Okay.
That's not.
Well, we'll test it out
not
later.
Not like her, because I've heard her. She's amazing. But please tell us how you did this transition.
Okay. So I believe that we all know in our hearts what we want to do, even if it's not apparent, even if we don't feel it at every moment and we're thinking like, what is my mission? What is my purpose? I think it's there. I think sometimes it's buried and you have to dig for it and you really have to ask yourself the question. So I got involved with my synagogue from a very young age after my bat mitzvah, and I felt such a connection to Jewish music, to Judaism, to spiritual leadership. I really felt it in my heart. And, you know, as a daughter of Persian immigrants, and there's a strong Persian Jewish community in Los Angeles, but it's kind of a traditional community and people follow traditional paths. You become a doctor, you become a lawyer, and it's also not as much as it used to be, but I would say it's changing, but women don't take certain roles that have traditionally been reserved for men. And the role of a clergy person has been traditionally reserved for men, at least in the Persian community.
So true.
I'm sure you both know, and many people know that women also didn't really have a public role in Judaism until probably 30, 40 years ago either. So I voiced this ambition to my community, to my family, and there was a lot of like, are you sure you want to do this? Is it really appropriate? Is it
what
a
about
real
your
job?
Law degree?
Yeah, exactly. Your brother's in medical school. Are you really going to do this?
What about your law degree again?
Exactly. This is even before I went to law school, but it was always, it always seemed non-conforming and like it was too risky and just not accepted. So I kind of listened to those voices and was timid at the time. And I decided, okay, well, I think that I am really interested in learning about the law. And it does seem like a wonderful education. So I'll go to cantorial school later. I'll do this and I'll get it out of the way, which, you know, I don't think is a good reason necessarily to go to law school, but I'm very happy that I did. I got some wonderful gifts. And the transition
And
came...
you're being very honest as well.
Yes, I hope that's okay.
Beyond. We love it. We find it refreshing.
Thank you. So the transition came after, you know, those 7 years, law school, taking the bar, practicing. I continued to be involved and the calling just felt stronger and stronger and stronger. And there's actually a moment that I felt, you know, those moments that you just have where something clicks and you realize you can't keep living the way that you've been living. So I was an entertainment lawyer and we were representing this band that really is a wonderful musical band. And at the time they hadn't really reached success yet. So they were struggling and they came to our office building to do a show, to do a performance. And it was like six of them. We gathered around them and they sang the song and I'll never forget the lyrics. It was something like, so pack up your bags and fly. You've got some living to do before you die. And I just started sobbing, really, in the middle of my office in front of all these attorneys, started sobbing because I realized, look at these amazing musicians. They have flown. They have taken the jump. It's been a struggle for them, but they're doing what is really speaking to their heart and their souls. And I'm sitting here and I haven't flown. And before I die, I need to do what's calling me every day. And I thought to myself, I can't live like this anymore. So I started really actively looking for a full-time opportunity to, and I found one and I left law, and the law firm that I worked for was so supportive, incredibly supportive.
What an interesting intersect between entertainment law, the music that moved you, and then now you're in music. That's got to mean something.
Well, yeah. It means a lot, and it also means that we have to take a break because we have to listen to some music when we come back. And, you know, Jackie, it's so refreshing, and I know a lot of people will say most people don't have the guts to follow their dreams, to follow their heart, and that's what you've done. We want to hear a lot more about what you are doing now. And interestingly, I want to talk a little bit after the break, and this is just a little bit of a teaser, what you mentioned about a woman's role and some of the fears that women have getting into what is considered a male-dominated profession, like being a cantor. And you wrote an article, Lean In, A Persian Jewish Perspective, which addressed Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook's popular and controversial hit Lean In. We want to talk about that as well because it's a fascinating read. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I guess I have to talk. I just want to sit and listen. It's amazing. I wish we could get whoever's singing this on the show. Jackie Raffi, the cantorial soloist. Wow. I'm blown away. And Melissa's sitting here. Tell us a little bit about that. And that, of course, was you. You're the director of music at Shomrei Torah Synagogue. And you've done a lot of stuff on YouTube. And obviously, the congregants can come and hear you. You've done some amazing programs and new initiatives, such as Shabbat Around the World, the Zamru Friday Night Experience, which I was fortunate enough to experience, Koleinu Shabbat Morning Services. Tell us about what we just heard and all of your singing and liturgy relating to what a former lawyer does.
So what you just heard was a beautiful and sad Persian song about love lost like the wintertime. And it was for an art opening, actually gallery opening at the Hillel building at UCLA, where they were trying to kind of showcase different cultures in Los Angeles. So I did a song in Farsi to represent the Jewish Persian community. And then I did a song in Hebrew and a song in English. So representing the intersection of different cultures, and I had to, my Farsi is pretty fluent, but I had to spend a lot of time with my parents to learn that song. It was not easy. And I Shabbat Around the World, I love this intersection of cultures, and something about Jewish tradition is that while the religion itself is ancient, many, many different people of different cultures practice it and adopt the customs of the cultures that they, in which they live. So you'll hear a lot of, for example, Persian Jewish melodies that sound like Persian melodies because they've kind of absorbed that culture and they've mixed it with Hebrew. So it creates this beautiful tapestry, and the Shabbat Around the World services that I've created focus on a certain culture or country. So we have a Sephardic Shabbat, and Sephardic Jews come from Spain. And so they have a language called Ladino that's a mix of Hebrew and Spanish. And we do all kinds of melodies, and we serve Sephardic food for dinner afterwards, and we tell stories. I have people of Sephardic origin coming up and talking about their upbringing and all the things they share. And I think these programs really make everyone feel like, you know, little things might separate us, but at our core, we have a lot of things in common.
And especially music, it brings us together. In the opening segment, you referenced being Persian and your parents being immigrants. And it really begs the question, you know, you talk so beautifully about what you're doing now, but at the time when you went to law school and when I assume you felt a little pressure to become a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. I know I remember a time in my life when I was in advertising. I was an executive in advertising, and I had to tell my parents that I was going to be an actor. And I was living in Canada at the time, and I moved to L.A. to be an actor. And I remember how nervous I was as I sat, and I made them the nicest breakfast that I could. I was 22 years old, and telling them that I was giving up this great job that I had been recruited for and was going to move to L.A. to become a struggling actor. Did you have that kind of moment with your parents, or how did it all go down when you had to explain to them that their daughter, the fancy Beverly Hills entertainment lawyer, was giving that up to do what you're talking about, what you're doing?
It's a great question because, you know, they put up a very they are very supportive, but they put up a very calm front when I was describing the transition because they knew that it was really in my heart, and they had been very supportive from day one. They just said Persian Jews, I'll make a stereotype, care a lot about get your graduate degree, get an education. So my parents said, you know, as long as you go to graduate school, we're happy with you can do whatever you want to do. So I had already become a lawyer, and they knew that I had been searching for a job that which I could transition to. And when I broke the news to them that it was going to happen, they were calm. They're like, okay, you know, if that's really what you want. But I know I heard later that, like, behind the scenes, they were having kind of, I think, some anxious conversations, like, is she sure? Like, this seems really risky. She's worked so hard to become a lawyer and to have a stable job and to, you know, make a certain income. And now, you know, there's things, of course, that are sacrificed. There's so much that's gained, but there are also lots of comforts that are sacrificed. So I think they were concerned, as
of course they were.
Yeah,
they were very concerned.
Yeah. They were concerned.
But how about now? Because, you know, from my understanding, I mean, I looked you up and I listened to your music and you moved me, and I closed my eyes and I felt like I was, you know, transported into another universe. I'm sure that they feel, hear, see, and can touch all of that. So what now? How is everybody feeling about this incredible transition?
First of all, thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot to me. They are just beyond. They're beyond happy. They used to be happy saying, like, you know, our daughter's a lawyer. But now I think they have a lot of pride saying our daughter is a cantor and she's studying to be a rabbi. So, like, they feel, and not that
they
it's
still
all
say,
pride.
P.S. she's a lawyer under their breath.
No, they don't. Yeah, Melissa, they do. That's not nice. I'm telling you, I got to say something, though, because Melissa's had this experience as many attorneys, women attorneys, where they say my daughter is a lawyer. So many people can say that. How many parents can say, my daughter's will be a cantorial soloist, is the director of music? How many parents can say that?
Not many.
So, Jackie, come on. I mean, anyone can say they're a lawyer. We're all lawyers in this room
right
now.
We're all lawyers.
But I certainly can't sing the way
nobody can sing like you, Jackie.
Well, there are some people.
Sure. Not anybody here.
Well, not in this room, but, you know, there are many cantors in this world who really move people.
Not
like
who
you.
Are lawyers.
There you go.
You see how that worked?
I guess.
It went full circle. It's like not who's not a cantor, but not who's a lawyer.
Exactly.
See?
You know, my parents actually did something that I really give them so much credit for. It was very progressive, and I think it kind of set the route for this whole transition. I don't know if they know, but we were the first Persian Jewish family, that's what I've been told, to join Wilshire Boulevard Temple, the really big, you know, the big synagogue
right.
in Los Angeles, one of the largest synagogues in California and one of the oldest synagogues. My parents enrolled my brother and me in that religious school. It is an Ashkenazi American synagogue with American Jews, and we were the only Persian family. And I remember feeling like I'm different. You know, I'm different from a lot of people here, but there was so much openness and so much, it was completely egalitarian. egalitarian. The boys and the girls could do all the same things. And I was encouraged to wear a kippah, which is the head covering, the yarmulke. And I think that really set the stage for me to feel like I don't have to, I can do what I want as a woman, as a girl at the time, I could do what I want. So I really give them a lot of credit for that.
That's incredible.
Why did they choose the Wilshire Temple? Isn't the Sephardic Temple just a couple feet away on Wilshire where you would see a lot more Persians?
It is, and it is a beautiful community with a wonderful clergy, and I really love that community so much. Right now, the Sephardic tradition traditionally does not allow women to read from the Torah or to do some other things that men can do. It's just, it's where they are, and I have complete and full respect for where they are, but it's not a place where I can, fully pursue the things that are in my heart and not necessarily a place that I could feel at home. Again, fully respect it, but yes, that was, my mom wanted to make sure that we would be somewhere where I could do everything my brother could do.
And talk a little bit about the congregation. You're at Shomrei Torah now, conservative congregation with Rabbi Richard Kamaris and Cantor Ron Snow there. How does that fit into where you want to be and your talents versus perhaps a lot of people listening may have thought that you were at a reform synagogue or new construction or whatever it is versus maybe not being permitted to be in an Orthodox environment being a woman?
Exactly. Shomrei Torah Synagogue is such a, people call it a Hamish community. It's such a warm, loving, welcoming community. It's a conservative synagogue, completely egalitarian, which is why they have a female clergy person. And I think that this community really has mastered the art of making you feel like you belong and making you feel at home, and everyone has a voice, and we have a volunteer community that's astounding. The things that they do are really wonderful. In terms of where I would fit in Reform Conservative, I really think that a lot of the denominations are blending over time and taking pieces from one another. So we have Renewal Judaism, which is kind of like a neo-Hasidic. It's taking kind of the love and joy and spark of a form of Orthodox Judaism and injecting it into a more progressive form of Judaism. So it doesn't really fit into any of these categories of Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox. There's also Reconstructionist. I would not be at a typical Orthodox synagogue. There are very distinct roles between a man and a woman and what they can do. And male are clergy and male are the ones who have a face.
Is that ever going to change?
Oh, I love
who
that
you asking, who you asking?
Just asking.
Are you asking the Almighty or are you asking Jackie?
I want to know what Jackie thinks.
Okay.
How are we doing?
I love that.
Are we making
question.
Any progress?
You know what? We are. There is a Yeshiva Maharat, which is like a seminary for women that has in New York that is actually training female rabbis, and it's Orthodox.
That's awesome.
And amazing. It's not, and I believe there's a branch in Israel too. It's not accepted by the Orthodox Union yet. I'll say yet, but it is accepted by many modern Orthodox organizations and individuals. So there's definitely a branch of open Orthodoxy that I think is moving in that direction, which is so exciting.
You have a female Jewish voice. I just love it.
Yeah, it's a very nice voice.
And a very nice voice.
Speaking of the voice, I do have to take a break. Before I do, I referenced the article, Lean In, A Persian Jewish Perspective. Jackie writes, if you want to speak up and take a leadership role, don't worry about appearing less desirable, more suspect, and being less liked. It's a real loss to the community if you don't step up and contribute your talents. And that's talking about women having a voice. And that's what Jackie's talking about now. We have to take a break. We're going to be back. And maybe we can even twist Jackie's arm to get her to sing a little bit on the show. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
ABC. Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Still thinking about what can go wrong? Instead, let's get excited about what can go right on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah. Are you singing, Melissa? No. Beautiful. Is that Jackie Raffi? Could it be? Jackie. Are you still there?
Here, yes, that's me.
Oh, wow, you're so humble. We're talking to Jackie Raffi, who is the cantorial soloist and director of music at Shomrei Torah Synagogue in West Hills. She is a lawyer by trade, I guess, if you want to call it that. 4 years doing entertainment law. What do you really hate about being a lawyer, Jackie? See, I got it. Jackie's the most positive person in the world, and you just sling an arrow of negativity and see how she reacts. I'm sure you can turn it into a positive.
I'll be honest. I think what was most difficult for me, truly, I mean this truthfully, is that I woke up every morning knowing that I had a different calling in life. So I felt like I was being really dishonest and inauthentic. And I think that knowledge, to have that like settle deep within you, it doesn't feel good. And I missed I would say it's that. And then a lot of things that come with that. So I would imagine a lot of the job of being a clergy person is a lot of interaction. And you can get that in a lot of types of law. The particular law that I was practicing was a lot of paperwork and deals and negotiations over the phone and over, over email and things like that, which was awesome. But I was really missing. I was yearning for something.
What kind of deals were you working on?
Recording deals, producer deals, songwriting agreements.
Wait a second. Stop for a second. You were doing recording deals and producer deals and music deals, and there you were inside of you thinking, I want my lawyer to be doing the deal for me as a singer. I don't want to be doing this. That's like a player agent when they're a baseball or basketball and they used to play or they want to be playing and they're doing the deal. That must be frustrating.
That's really insightful of you to say, and I'm embarrassed to say that. And I would always say to myself, like in my head, like, "Oh, shush! Like, you're lucky to be doing what you're doing." Don't you know? I
did
quieted
you just
that
hear
voice.
Yourself? You were so good. It's only natural to have these thoughts when you're that good. But it's a testament to how strong you are that you just switched fields.
Well, and confidence, too. A lot of people don't have the confidence because it's a burn in the hand. I mean, you go through all the years of law school in UCLA, tough law school, obviously did well, get a job, and it's not that easy to kind of throw away all of the training that you put so much heart and effort into.
Yeah, it was not easy. I'll tell you that for 2 weeks, when I knew that I had to give notice, it took about 2 weeks for my contract at the synagogue to be finalized. So I knew it was impending. I could not sleep at night. I would just lay awake and I felt like I was panicking when I'd go to sleep. Like, oh my gosh, am I doing this? It was really scary. I don't want to play it down. It was really hard. And when I broke the news, also, I almost couldn't get the words out. I was scared. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I was terrified, but I knew I had to do it. And I think that pushed me through.
And now you look back and it's a real good lesson when you think about it, that you can look back on experiences that were terrifying and were causing sleepless nights. And you look back and say, well, it was all worth it. You get through it. And we've just experienced the high holiday season. And that's, that's an important time for Jewish people and others who also celebrate or respect it. Tell us a little bit about what the high holidays mean to you.
They are this beautiful opportunity for us to check in with our inner selves, our innermost selves. We take a full month before the high holidays. It's called Elul, the Jewish month of Elul, to reflect on the past year. What kind of people were we? What kind of lives did we live? Are we happy with who we are? Are we happy with what we've done? And we also inspect not only our actions, but our relationship to God or however you perceive, the universe, nature, whatever you perceive as greater than yourself. We hold ourselves accountable. And I think the journey through the high holidays, through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is meant to give us a kind of spiritual reawakening. We do an accounting and then we, make a resolution to be a better person this year, to do better, to be the best person that we can be. We kind of wipe the slate clean and we try to express our hope that we're going to be a better person.
I think that's amazing. You know, I look forward to Rosh Hashanah, the high holidays, every single year as a TANS, as a criminal defense attorney, to wipe my slate clean.
Really?
What about you?
I just like
that was
to
a joke, and I didn't even get one laugh. That was a joke. It was just like crickets.
What? As a criminal attorney, no. I think you have to think about those things.
No, I don't. I'm completely within the bounds of the law and all of that, and I'm helping people do justice.
I just like to have a couple days off from work. That's what
That's
I
true.
Look forward to.
That's
no, I'm,
true.
I'm
that,
kidding.
That earns a laugh.
No, it doesn't.
Melissa, actually, I took what you said. I took it seriously because I thought you meant because some of the things that you deal with are heavy and...
Yes, they are.
It's nice to have like a spiritual refreshing so that you can encounter the next year with fresh eyes and really be like reinvested in what you're doing.
You know, people don't understand how much focus when you're in the clergy for synagogues or churches or whatever, when you have these events, these important holidays. And I know that you've spent a great deal of time. You prepare, you think about, you know, what needs to be said, the prayers, the singing, the leading the congregants. How is that for you? Is it like tax preparation season for an accountant?
Exactly. It is tax season for clergy. It is incredibly stressful because you need to, you're essentially, even though it is holy work and you are trying to really also feel the process, I think for clergy people, there is a sense of you are putting on this production. Somebody once called it sacred theater, and I thought that was brilliant. You are creating an experience for the congregation where they can feel moved. And sometimes when you're the one coordinating that and creating that, there's a lot of pressure. And it's sometimes a challenge to also fully be in and connected the whole time. So that's really the challenge that's my personal challenge and goal.
And you are, in fact, quite an actor. When you talk about some of these things being on stage, tell us a little bit about Songstruck, the rainy Saturday night where you were acting to the congregants. You were sounding like you were shaken and you were nervous and you were stammering. Tell us what really happened, because I would have really believed it. I'm amazed, and I have seen you in action, and you're so calm and so cool. And for a young person who has, you know, all of everyone's eyes on them, you handle it so well. Some of the messages that you give are so inspiring. But there was a night when you really had a tough time getting through the beginning of the program at Songstruck. Tell us about that.
Yes. Okay. So we had a big fundraiser concert at this synagogue this February of 2019, and it was lots of, it was totally secular music, mostly like 90% secular music, just fun, awesome, upbeat, pop, musical theater music to get everybody, you know, enjoying and having just a fun night of entertainment. And I invited four other cantors from around the city to join me, who are my friends. And we, for the opening number, I wanted to do something that would kind of wake up the audience. So I tricked everyone into thinking that the other singers who were featured in this concert couldn't show up because it was raining. And it was perfect because our opening number was Another Day of Sun from La La Land. So I talked about how, you know, we just want sun, but it's raining, and you know how the rain messes up our traffic here in LA. So I did this big welcome, and then I said, unfortunately, none of the singers are actually here yet. And then I heard a gasp go through the audience, like, oh, is she serious? And this nervous chuckle. And I said to the band, all right, guys, hit it. I'm going to just fill in for everybody's role. And as soon as the band started playing, I opened my mouth, and then we had planted the singers, the four other cantors, in the audience. So as soon as I opened my mouth to sing, the spot falls on somebody in the back of the audience, one of the cantors, and she starts singing the first line, and then she walks up to the stage. And
oh,
then we
have
the second one do, and then we all end up on the stage together singing this song.
Wow.
Can you sing it?
Sure.
Oh, wow. That was putting her on the spot.
Can you sing it? Let's sing
it. Melissa.
She paints a beautiful picture. I just witnessed that whole thing, but I can't hear it. Can you sing it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
You can hear the song?
I'm giving you lots of time. Do you notice what I'm doing? It's a little bit of a filibuster to get you prepared for this, because I don't want you to feel like you have to just get
just
on
clear
it.
Clear that throat and get right on it.
Okay, a couple bars. Look, you know what? I got to tell you something about Jackie. She is not afraid of anything.
I believe that.
We've had some of the most well-known lawyers on the show. We've had entertainers, actors, singers, producers, directors, and they all shudder when I try and cross-examine them. We have some of the greatest lawyers, and they're like, I don't want to talk about it.
They have nothing on you, Jackie.
And look at her. She's like not afraid.
She's amazing.
Just bring it. Bring it on.
So sing it. Let's
bring it on. Wait a second. Bring it on. That's a movie. Okay. Have I filibustered enough? You ready, Jackie?
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. This is the part I sang. So I sang, I hear them every day. The rhythms in the canyons that'll never fade away. The ballads in the ballrooms left by those who came before. They say you gotta want it more. So I bang on every door.
Wow.
I love it.
Thank you.
Wayman, where's the applause? Come on.
That was phenomenal. I want more.
Well, we may be able to twist Jackie's arm. Maybe we'll get something, you know, in Hebrew as
like
well.
Like a Kol Nidre?
Kol Nidre, that's a tough one.
Like, give me something.
You're not doing...
Yeah.
She's like, no, I can totally do that.
Okay.
And like in my sleep.
So Kol Nidre that we did on Yom Kippur, it's a more somber and dark. Can I sing you something in Hebrew that's more uplifting?
Alive? Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we do have to take a break, Jackie. So we are going to let you choose that. And it's the best tease that we can ever do. We're always teasing into the next segment. But to hear Jackie singing her own choice after the break, that's something you definitely want to come back for. You listen to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Melissa's laughing. You shouldn't be laughing. I know why you're laughing, though. This is Neil Diamond, the jazz singer. And let's clarify something here. Kol Nidre, a very spiritual song for Jewish people on Yom Kippur, is no laughing matter at all. It's a time of reflection. And you think about year past, the year forward. The only reason Melissa chuckled there was because before the break, we're talking to Jackie Raffi, who's the cantorial soloist and director of music at Shomrei Torah Synagogue in West Hills. And Melissa had asked Jackie to sing something. She had mentioned Kol Nidre, and Jackie said, you know what? It's a little somber. It's a little bit, maybe not something that's upbeat that we want to do on the show. And then what happens coming out of the break? Wayman goes for it. He's like, that's it.
Kol Nidre commercial.
He's just coming in with Neil Diamond. So, Jackie, we appreciate your sentiments, and we're not going to ask you to do Kol Nidre, especially after Neil Diamond does it. But it is something that I think always gives a lot of people the chills when they hear it, especially in synagogue, as a very important reflective prayer.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are all attorneys here. This is a very legalistic formula. It's actually not even a prayer. It doesn't have God's name in it. It talks about the vows and promises that we've made, and it has a lot of legal Hebrew legal language. So it's interesting, very interesting that Melissa brought it up, and we can go into it another time.
What a great...
Because we're going to listen to you sing now?
Wait a second. That's all Melissa wants. She just wants a concert. But, people ask me all the time. They say, Alan, your show's called Gervie's Law. It's a legal show. 2 weeks ago, you had had Ben Brofman on, one of the greatest criminal attorneys of our time. You have Alan Dershowitz on. You have Gloria Allred on. You have all of these lawyers on. When you have Jackie Raffe, notwithstanding a UCLA law school grad and a former lawyer at an entertainment, a current lawyer, but formerly at an entertainment law firm, where is the connection? Where is the connection? And there you have it. Jackie, why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because there is so much synergy between what you do in your forum and what we do now and what you used to do in our forum. And Kol Nidre is a perfect example.
Absolutely. Kol Nidre is really an expression of our fear that even our best intentions for the new year are not going to be fulfilled. So it is a prayer that, or I'd say it's a formula, really, that we recite, and we recite it three times, which really shows the importance of this. We recite it to say, may all of our vows and promises and everything that we make this year, may they not be really held up so strongly or so strictly, which sounds crazy. It's basically saying, may the promises that I make not be fulfilled. But it's really not saying that. It's a metaphor to say we as human beings make a lot of promises that we can't fulfill. And we say, I'm going to be better this year, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And this is an expression of the human condition saying, hopefully we won't be judged too harshly. And even though really ideally we should not make promises that we can't keep, and ideally we should be really careful about every single word we say, we are just fallible human beings. So we're hoping that all of these vows and these promises that we made in vain, that were really silly and we shouldn't have made, are not going to be held against us.
Wow. You know, you sound like a rabbi. When I hear you, and I know you can do Devar Torah, which is the Torah for the portion of the week, to talk about the interpretation. Tell us just quickly, because it sounds like you really should be a rabbi. What is going on with this rabbinical school?
Yes, I really love learning and love studying Torah. I think it's such a wellspring of valuable information, and it's literature. It's a literature that's thousands of years old and that shows the history of a people. And I think it's also like representative of the human condition. It's not so, yes, it is specific, but I think it's a foundation upon which many civilizations have drawn inspiration. So I think that there are so many, and we read Torah every year, and you'll hear rabbis giving sermons, rabbis and cantors and other clergy people giving sermons based on the Bible that relate to our lives today. And there's something about this literature that's timeless. And so,
and that's something that you enjoy doing in concert with the musical aspects.
Exactly.
Do you like the words I chose, in concert? Speaking about concerts, Melissa's looking at me like she's looking right through me. She said, you promised you'd let me ask Jackie to sing some more. So go ahead. I'm turning it over to Melissa.
All right. Jackie, okay. Specifically, you referenced an incredible song that you wanted to sing, a passion piece.
She did?
You said that it was going to enliven the station.
The studio, the
no
listeners?
No pressure.
Go for it.
Yes. This is a Sephardic melody, and it's called Adon HaSlichot, which means Master of Forgiveness. It is a song asking for forgiveness for all of the things we've done this year that we want to be forgiven for. I'm giving myself a note. Here we go.
Adon HaSlichot, Bochen Levavot, Gole Amukot, Dover Tzedakot, Chatzanu lefanecha, rachem aleinu. Chatzanu lefanecha, rachem aleinu.
Wow. Without accompaniment, too. What is your feeling about that? That was beautiful. Do you prefer to have accompaniment, or can you do it old school without?
It's such a powerful question that you're asking, a timely question, because our synagogue right now is experimenting with introducing more and more musical accompaniment. Traditionally, in many synagogues and in many churches, there isn't accompaniment. It's a long list of reasons, but that's just the traditional way to just do it unaccompanied. I love accompaniment. I think it adds so much spirit and depth and joy. And if you read a lot of literature, a lot of biblical biblical literature, there are a lot of references to musical instruments. So I think that it's part of the tradition, and I just love it. And I love music, and I have a background in
music. You know what it's analogous to? We talk a lot on this show when we have some legal scholars, and they talk about constitutional law, and they talk about the Constitution and what the framers intended with a lot of the clauses, with a lot of the thoughts that went into the Constitution. And you start wondering, times have changed so much. And I think it's analogous to what you're talking about in the Jewish religion and other religions. As, you know, women take a more active role, let's say, with conservative Judaism, and perhaps in the future, God willing, with Orthodox religion as well. But times change, and a lot of, you know, maybe grandparents go into a church or a synagogue and say, we never had music, and now you have an accompaniment with a guitar or a piano. And I just think that maybe we have to go along with the changing times, and maybe that's the same with the Constitution, that things that were never contemplated because they never knew what kind of life we were going to live in 2019, maybe laws change as well.
Makes a good point.
That's what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
Make good points.
I feel like my life's being managed.
We only have a couple more minutes, Jackie. So tell us what the future for you is going to be and what it looks like, and maybe some good message that we can take with us as we move forward into the new year, at least the Jewish new year.
Sure. For now, my immediate future is to finish school. I'm going to continue in this wonderful community, Shomrei Torah Synagogue, and I have 2 years left of cantorial school and then an additional year to finish the rabbinic degree. And I'm also getting married in December, so that's
Mazel
Tov.
Mazel Tov. Simen Tov, Mazel Tov. Come on, Melissa, can you sing?
Mazel Tov, Simen Tov, Simen Tov, Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov and Simen Tov and Mazel Tov.
Come on, Jackie. Mazel Tov and Simen Tov. Yeah, you were way better.
You guys are great. No, it sounds beautiful.
That's right. When are you getting married?
December of this year.
Well, that'll be something wonderful to look forward to, and I'm sure the congregation will be thrilled.
We're going
to
put you on the spot right now and tell you that we want invitations.
No, we're not.
You are more than welcome.
Yeah, we are.
We have 30,
just did it.
30 seconds. Tell us quickly the second part of the question for this year. What's your wish?
I wish for all of you, for all of us, to dig as deeply into our souls as we can, to find our purpose and to find meaning in our lives, so that the life that we live, our everyday life where we're attached to our phones and everything's passing by us in a blur, can be transcended and we can actually experience the beauty and the preciousness of the little moments that are happening every day.
Amen.
Amen. That's beautiful. And it makes us thankful that we have had an opportunity to visit with Jackie Raffi today on Gervie's Law. Jackie, thank you so much for an incredible hour.
Thank you so much. It was an honor and such a pleasure to talk to you both.
And Shana Tova to you.
Shana Tova, Jackie.
Shana Tova, Melissa and Alan.
Thank you. Wow. All right. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Gervie's Law. Thanks for listening. Next week, I believe we have Molly Bloom from Molly's Game. Molly Bloom will be on with us. The movie's Molly's Game, about the high-stakes poker game, a little bit of a change from the cantorial spirit that we had today. See you next week.
See the
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.